So we start our second hour. Nice to have you here. I'm live in the Quicken Loan Studios in Southern California. Quicken Loans applies simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. Busy, busy second hour. I've got Chris Mannix coming up next segment. He's a senior writer for Yahoo Sports. He covers NBA and boxing. And I want to get his thoughts on Triple G and Canelo, and we will look ahead at some other things that he's working on. Jeff Perlman's got a brand new book out. It's about the USFL. And like everything Perlman does, it's awesome. He will be in studio later on this hour as well. Starting hour number two off, remember Danica? Do you remember the queen, Danica, from Jacksonville? Remember what she said she wanted to do to a young Jags fan?
Now, I'm out of money for season tickets, and the only thing I can do is go to the games, get drunk, find a little tenderoni, and take him home for the night and ruin him. I'm out.
That was last season. I'm out of money. All I can do now is go to the games, get drunk, find a young tenderoni, take him home, and ruin him. I'm out. And then all of a sudden, she shows up right around the same time that the newest member of the XR4TI showed up. You know, Ross from Friends. She tweets, at Nika989, quote, "I'm still celebrating this ass-whipping that the Jags put on 12 and the hoodie. Ross can still get it." War Ramsey smack talk tour. She tweeted out to Ross, or tweeted about Ross last week, and said, "Hey man, I'm all about this fine young tenderoni. I'll be done with him in 5 minutes or less." So she's still feeling that. The XR4TI is still a thing, still a big topic on the program. Kyle Brandt came in on Friday. He used to be the guy on the XR4TI. He left. He's gone on. He's done extremely well. He's got takes on the XR4TI now. They're on TV. He obliterated them, and it continues. Look at this guy. Frank in the 209 tweets, "Keith Arnold looks like a bootleg Val Kilmer body double from Joel Schumacher's Batman Forever, but he got rejected on behalf of having pepperoni nipples that didn't line up right in the bat suit." What the hell? The hell.
Val Kilmer.
Global warming.
Val
Kilmer. Pepperoni nipples that don't line up in the bat suit. Get the Simulcast. Check us out on TV. See exactly what we're talking about.
Val Kilmer.
Pepperoni.
Christy
nipples that don't match up.
Global warming.
Personal appearance, still not a topic on the program. Personal appearance, still not show fodder. Let's just stick to the games. Stick to the personalities. Stick to the issues. Stick to the topics. Not whether or not dudes' pepperoni nipples do not match up in a bat suit. Not a topic. Don't care. 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Urban Meyer returning to the sidelines, releasing a statement, coming off like the biggest bag ever. I may or may not get to it today. If I don't get to it today, you know I will get to it tomorrow. And we're talking about week two in the NFL. Meantime, I want to say that the Buffalo Bills are the new Cleveland Browns, except the current Cleveland Browns absolutely refuse to relinquish that title. Last week, they had one chance after another to beat the Steelers, and they would not. Even down to this field goal attempt in overtime. You hit this, you win the game, you change the entire narrative and the way people see you. Roll it.
Here comes the field goal team, and listen to this stadium. Gonzalez is ready. Hewlett will snap. Snap is back. Ball down. Kick on the way. It got blocked. The Steelers blocked the kick, and it never had a prayer.
Nope, never. Ever had a chance. Never had a prayer. BGB. BGB. Brown's gonna brown. But that went to another level when they announced that they were parting ways with Josh Gordon. Now that sucks. Not just for Browns fans, but just in general, because it sounded like there was a possibility that he had in fact turned his life around and that he was doing the work and that he was winning that battle. But if the Browns are dumping Gordon, that tells me a lot of that is not happening. Because the Browns have made it pretty clear they are not in the position to be giving up on talent, much less that talent, no matter how many issues they have. They were willing to give him one chance after another. So if they're giving up on Gordon, that sure makes it seem like there's something very wrong. And that's not what you want to be doing before you take on Drew Brees and the Saints in New Orleans. I mean, that seemed like they were primed for a blowout. But the blowout never happened because the Browns' defense showed up huge again. And then in the fourth quarter, on 4th and 5, with just over a minute left in the game, 4th and 5 now, Cleveland down 6, Tyrod Taylor dialed up some magic.
4th down and 5, out of the shotgun. He's got the snap. He's backpedaling, up in the pocket, throwing long and deep for Callaway. He caught it!
That is an absolutely unbelievable play. That play right there is why I'm one of the only people that continues to take up for this guy. This is why I always say he does not get nearly the respect that he deserves. Taylor, I'm not surprised by that play. This guy has got unbelievable stones. I mean, what a ball that was he threw. 4th and 5, perfect pass in the end zone. Touchdown, tie game, 18-18, thanks for coming. Did his job? Unfortunately, the kicker did not do his job because all they needed was an extra point to take the lead and steal that game in New Orleans.
As Britton Colquitt wanted it reset, now it's at 3. Gonzalez for the extra point, snap back, ball down, the kick is up, and he missed it again! Zane Gonzalez misses the extra point again!
That's
with a minute 16 left.
Yeah, you think? That's in his head. You think? Missed a couple of field goals. Missed a couple of extra points. They have a chance to go into New Orleans and rip that game. He saw Tyrod Taylor throw an unbelievable ball on 4th and 5, and he missed the point after. I mean, damn. To quote that legendary Browns fan, oh my God, this is not happening.
Oh my God,
oh my God, this is not happening. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Unfortunately, it is. It is. Again, BGB. Browns. Gunnar Brown. I mean, how many times can the Browns... I'm really serious about this. How many times can the Browns do the most Browns thing ever? How many times? How often can the Browns do the most Browns things ever? Every week? Every play? Even LeBron was stunned by that completion to Callaway and then the butchered extra point. Are you kidding me on the extra point, Joe? Nope. Nope. Sadly, LeBron, nobody's kidding. That happened. I mean, what could be more Browns than to tie that game the way they did on 4th down and then miss the PAT? How about tying that game on 4th down, missing the extra point, and then giving up a 42-yard pass 2 plays later to let the Saints get into field goal range? Because that's exactly what they did, too. But they still weren't done. The Saints hit that field goal to go up 3 with 21 seconds left. But Taylor and the Browns wouldn't go down. Taylor to Jarvis Landry, 25. That gets him to midfield. Taylor hits Antonio Callaway, 16 yards. He gets out of bounds. I mean, at that point, a totally composed, totally professional drive to get into field goal range at the New Orleans 34. In other words, that was the least Browns thing ever, and now they've got a shot to tie it. Send this thing into overtime with a field goal. Maybe get this thing back. Rip it back. It was right there for them.
21-18, New Orleans. Snap is back. Ball is down. He's into it. End over end. The kick is no good. With 3 seconds to go. And Gonzalez, with his helmet off, takes the long walk over to the Browns bench area again.
At least it was close. And by the way, bro, I would not be taking your helmet off. Not after a game like that. Of course he missed that kick. Because after missing the extra point, there was no way he was going to hit that field goal. Hitting that field goal would have meant that the Browns are no longer the Browns. Let me reiterate that point. Hitting that field goal would have meant the Browns are no longer the Browns anymore. But they are still the Browns. And because they are still the Browns gonna Brown, no matter what. BGB. BGB. Browns gonna Brown for life. How's that gonna change? It didn't there, so how is that going to change? like I said, good things or bad things happen to good people. See Buffalo. Bad things happen to good people. See Cleveland. Bad things happen to good people. See Chael Jr. Just kidding, Keith. Bad things happen to good people. Chris Mannix coming up momentarily. This email says, busting him up with the Batman theme, Alvy. Come on, man. This email says, Dear Hash, Gordon, good job, good effort. We missed you. Regards, unemployment, Cheech and Chong movies, Doritos, Twinkies, and grape soda. Eric from the Big Easy wore Cleveland, going Cleveland in the Superdome yesterday. Again, I'm not piling on this guy. I think that's bad news. Bad news for him, bad news for the Browns. Bad news for everybody hoping for a good story. The fact that he came back made it seem like he'd gotten this thing turned around. Damn, Alvy.
It's Val Kilmer.
Wow, Alvy. I'm trying to do a show here, Alvy. That was Keith Owen who walked back in. I got a feeling that we're going to hear the Batman theme every time he comes in the studio now. Chael's going to be like, hey, Hawk, just bring the email in for him. Just bring the tweet in for him. Again, with Josh Gordon, it seemed like he had gotten control of it. It seemed like he turned his life around. Not just his career, but he turned his life around. The fact that they're giving up on him, the fact that they're going to trade him reportedly, tells you that he's out of chances there and made another mistake, and probably a big mistake. Ed Hedstrom Bacon tweets, pepperoni nipple smack. What's the world coming to? Signed, Edward James Olmos's dermatologist. Yeah, I don't get that, Bacon, and I don't care to get that. I just know you're coming from a bad place with it. Dear James Rome, we were all pretty positive that Vontae Davis retired in 2016. Sincerely, Indianapolis Colts fans. I got bad news for you, Keith. If you have Hawk walking in, Alvin's still going to hit that song. Dear Rome, thank goodness Nebraska fans have so many other things to distract them from Huskers football. I just heard that song again. Oh, you know, Keith is back in the studio. Over. Sign, getting lost in corn mazes, chewing on straw, and waiting for the mail. Husker fans, thank goodness Nebraska fans have so many other things to distract them from Huskers football. Sign, getting lost in corn mazes, chewing on straw, and waiting for the mail. Super Dave in L.A. tweets, Browns fans, don't worry. Beer is on us September 30th. Signed, the Raiders. Not bad. Not bad at all. Rich in the 302 tweets, you clones are having a good day. I know it was an amazing weekend because your content right now is about as good as it's ever been. Rich tweets, I don't care how good Tyrod plays. All I care about is when is Baker Mayfield going to start? War Captain Underpants breaking the streak eventually. Thing is, I get that too. I love Baker Mayfield. I'm all about that guy. I'd buy as much stock in him as I could. But I still have Tyrod's back. I've always supported him. Guy threw an amazing ball. It's like, it doesn't even matter what's happened in the game up until that point. Fourth and five, he's not checking down. He's not looking to move the chains. This guy's going for it all. Home run ball. Perfectly thrown ball. Perfectly thrown ball. Did his job. Kicker didn't do his. Chris Mannix joins me when we come back. Jeff Perlman right after that. Building pros. Check this out. If you're a contractor or a builder or a remodeler, Lumber Liquidators Pro Plus is the only partner you are going to need for all of your flooring needs. With special pro-only pricing and dedicated support, LL Pro Plus will help you get your flooring jobs done quickly and profitably. Are you worried about selection and availability? Do not be. Lumber Liquidators has over 150 million square feet of flooring available, with over 100,000 square feet in stock at most stores. And they stock professional grade adhesives, underlayment, molding, tools, fasteners, grout, so you can get exactly what you need when you need it. Are you too busy to pick up your flooring? That's not a problem. The LL Pro Plus team will deliver it right to your job. And with LL Pro Plus, you can even get a business line of credit. So put the LL Pro Plus flooring experts on your team today. Visit your local Lumber Liquidators or go to lumberliquidators.com/prosales. Walk into a store or go to lumberliquidators.com/prosales today.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Let's get out football for a minute. Talk some boxing. We are joined right now by a very good friend of the program, senior writer for Yahoo Sports. He covers the NBA and boxing. Also a host for DAZN, which has the Anthony Joshua heavyweight fight this Saturday from London. Very busy man, as always. Chris Mannix is my guest. Chris, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How you doing, man?
Great, bud. Great. Great to have you back. Thanks for doing this. Now, you've had a couple of days to think about it, Chris. So, what did you make of what you saw on Saturday between Canelo and Triple G?
I still think the same thing I felt immediately after that last belt. You know, terrific fight, evenly matched guys. I scored the fight for Golovkin by a couple of points, 7-5 for Gennady. But as that final bell rang, Jim, I said to myself, I'd be okay with a draw or 15-13 the other way. Anything beyond that, I would have scratched my head out a little bit. And sure enough, we had one judge with a draw, and you know, two other very good judges, including Steve Weisfeld, who I think is, you know, arguably the best judge in boxing, had it 15-13 for Canelo. I mean, Canelo Alvarez, he earned that win. He took the fight to Gennady Golovkin. He landed the heavier shots. He was out-jabbed. He was out-landed. But these are imperfect statistics. I had no problem with the decision going as something different than what I had on my card.
Chris Mannix joining us. All right, you pointed out that going into that fight, the big question was about Canelo and conditioning. Before we get into Canelo's strategy in the fight, how impressed were you with his conditioning and the fact, Chris, that in the middle rounds, it seemed like it was Triple G who was fading and not Alvarez?
Yeah, incredibly impressed because, look, this was not only a big moment for Canelo's career, but to many people, including myself to some degree, it was going to be a referendum on his status as a clean fighter. I mean, if he had gone out there and been gassed early and gotten knocked out, I think his entire career would have been tainted. I think we would have been talking about, well, he tested positive here. He had to have been doing it before. This was a guy that was unquestionably clean for this fight, that was the better conditioned fighter for 12 rounds. I didn't see a single lull, you know, outside of maybe a 10-second spurt here or there when he got hit, you know, for Canelo Alvarez. So his conditioning was flawless for this fight. And this is what I asked his trainers afterwards, and they said they weren't even worried about the conditioning. They were just focused on other things like power shots because they wanted to back Golovkin up.
Couldn't have been more impressed with his conditioning, but then there's the strategy. Chris Mannix, my guest. What do you make of the strategy from the first fight and how Alvarez's team completely changed it up for the rematch?
A brilliant strategy. And I've been pretty critical over the years of Canelo's trainers, Chepo and Eddie Reynoso. It goes back to what I saw against Floyd Mayweather. You remember that fight? It was one of the worst strategies I've ever seen in boxing. You know, they had a guy physically bigger than Floyd Mayweather, and their strategy for 12 rounds was to try to box him on the outside. I couldn't have been more disappointed in that strategy. And I believe I suggested at the time that, you know, at 23 years old, Canelo needs to change up his training team. Now, Canelo's fiercely loyal to these guys, and they really showed their value in this fight. I mean, nobody believed that that Canelo was going to stand there and trade punches with Golovkin. I asked Tom Loeffler, the promoter, immediately after the fight. I said, "How surprised are you?" He said, "Extremely." We thought he was going to move. We thought he was going to fight off the ropes. He fought a completely different style, and that's a variable in all this, Jim, because you know they made a great adjustment in Canelo's corner to fight this way. I don't think, and I didn't see any kind of real adjustment from Golovkin's corner to adjust to what they were seeing.
Chris Mannix, my guest. I want to be very clear about this, Chris. Not only did I not see that coming, that switch in strategy, I'm kind of blown away by it. I mean, there's his physical conditioning, then there's his mental strength, but the willingness to take a punch from a guy, Chris, that nobody ever wants to take a punch from, what did that tell you about Canelo that he stood right in front of Triple G?
I mean, he must have learned something in that first fight about his chin. And his chin, Jim, has been a point of contention for really the last 8 years. Now, he's fought some good opponents and, you know, never been stopped by any stretch. However, you go back 8 years when he was on the undercard of one of Floyd Mayweather's shows, and he was fighting this journeyman named Jose Miguel Cotto. It was actually Miguel Cotto's older brother. He fought Cotto in that fight. He got rocked in the first round, knocked back against the ropes, almost stopped in that fight, which would have completely changed his career. Since then, there's been some questions about whether this guy has a chin, but whatever happened in that first fight, whatever shots he took, he clearly realized, his trainers realized, that he could walk through all that stuff, that Golovkin, as big and bad as he was, just couldn't hurt him. And if they had that kind of knowledge under their belt, that strategy was as good as it gets.
Chris Mannix, my guest. All right, we talked about Canelo and what that fight meant to him, not only in terms of his career, but his entire reputation. If his reputation, Chris, was on the line going into that fight, what does Triple G's career look like coming out of the fight? Again, a really close fight. If the couple of judges scored a different way in the 12th round, we have a different outcome. Is it only one loss, because it's his first loss? Is it only one loss, or does it set up some questions about Triple G and his career? And do we now question whether or not he is one of the all-time greats with that loss?
I do think that you have to kind of take a step back from the all-time great conversation when it comes to Golovkin. He just doesn't have a signature win on that resume. Now, I say that with the full understanding that there were some of the top middleweights, even super middleweights, that were running as fast as possible to get away from him over the last 5 years. His inability to get a top-flight opponent has everything to do with all the other top opponents, including Canelo, who spent a year plus avoiding that fight as he kind of matured into a middleweight, and I think waited for Golovkin to age a little bit. So I think we take a step back from anointing Golovkin in that kind of Hagler class, the Hopkins class of the great middleweights of their of boxing's history. But I don't know that it diminishes him as a surefire Hall of Famer. I don't know if it diminishes him as one of the great middleweight champions in terms of, obviously the 20 title defenses of all time. It just it knocks him off that pedestal of being among the all-time greats.
All right, but do you think he won that first fight? And if he gets credit for winning that first fight, is he on that pedestal with the other greats?
He probably is. I had a draw the first fight, Jim. I thought the middle rounds were all Golovkin, and the first three and the last three were Canelo Alvarez, part due to the conditioning issues that we talked about a little bit earlier. So, yeah, if he wins that first fight, it obviously sets up a natural trilogy, which we'll probably see anyway. Maybe you do look at his career a little bit differently, but he's been plagued by the fact that, besides Canelo Alvarez, who's out there in the middleweight division that makes you excited? It's that opponent that you get excited to see Golovkin face. I mean, look, guys, the top-ranked guys promoted Manny Pacquiao for years will tell you that, Pacquiao benefited so greatly from being in a weight class of other superstars, from the Miguel Cotto's, the Margaritos, to De La Hoya, to Mayweather. He had a factory line of opponents that he could fight on any given night. Gennady Golovkin just has never had that cluster of opponents that could make him a star.
You mentioned Pacquiao, Chris. Is there a worse idea than Pacquiao Mayweather again?
I don't know. Like Pacquiao me is probably a worse idea, but other than that, I don't know.
I'd rather see that, my friend.
I have no interest, Jim. And look, I'll be honest. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, it's no surprise that Floyd puts out a post like that on the day that Canelo Alvarez, who fights under Oscar De La Hoya's banner, is having a card. Anything to draw attention away from De La Hoya and stick it to De La Hoya again, Floyd Mayweather's going to do. I mean, Pacquiao, look, there's a million reasons why this fight will probably never happen. One of the more, reasonable ones is the fact that Pacquiao, I think, is like $32 million in debt to the IRS. And, he's never going to fight in the U.S. again. And Mayweather, for the last decade plus, has been fighting in Las Vegas every single time. So among the many reasons why that fight's never going to happen is that Pacquiao will probably never fight in the U.S. again.
Good, because I think that I would rather fight either one of them myself than watch the two of them fight each other. I think I'd rather fight both of them at the same time than watch the two of them fight each other and pay for it.
I don't think you have to worry about it either.
Thank you.
Floyd, I was talking to someone that would know about this, and he was telling me that this hasn't even come up in a real conversation in any talks they've had with Floyd. And I think Pacquiao is likely to get in with Amir Khan at some point, either before the end of the year or early next year. That's a fight, Jim, that makes way too much sense. I mean, Khan needs a big-name opponent. He can sell out a stadium in the U.K., so there's no tax issue in the U.S. And I think a Khan-Pacquiao fight right now is a 50-50 type of fight that both guys should be running towards.
Good. Chris Mannix, senior writer for Yahoo Sports, covering the NBA and boxing, also a host for DAZN, which has Anthony Joshua, a heavyweight title fight this Saturday from London. Great job, Chris. Thank you so much. Always good to have you on.
Anytime, Jim.
Take care, bud. Chris Mannix, one of the best. One of the best of the best. When we come back, speaking of one of the best, Jeff Perlman in studio talking about a brand new book that he has dropped about the USFL. Awesome reading. And I got to tell you, since I've been sleeping on my Casper mattress, I have for a while now, I would pick it over every single mattress I have ever had. It really does help me get my best night of sleep, period. Because once you try Casper, you're going to love yours as much as I love mine. I'm sleeping cool and comfortably every single night thanks to the unique combination of foams that provide the right pressure relief and alignment. Casper ships right to your front door for free in a small, how did they do that, sized box. They'll even pick it up if you don't love it, and they will refund everything from its engineering to its packaging to letting you try it for 100 nights. It's no wonder the Casper has over 35,000 five-star reviews of all their products across Casper, Google, and Amazon. Sleeping on a mattress is the best way to try it. Put Casper to the test in your own home for 100 nights risk-free. Go to Casper.com. Use my code ROME. Get $50 off towards the purchase of select mattresses. Casper.com. Code ROME. Get $50 off towards the purchase of select mattresses. Casper.com. Terms and conditions do apply.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
And don't forget, CBS's Super Bowl season continues Sunday when Denver takes on Baltimore, Oakland meets Miami, Buffalo heads to Minnesota, Cincinnati getting after it with Carolina, Tennessee takes on Jacksonville, and in the City of Angels, the Chargers clash with the Rams. The day kicks off with the NFL Today presented by Jeep at 12 Eastern on CBS. Joined right now by somebody I consider a very good friend. He is a New York Times bestselling author. His books include The Bad Guys Won, Love Me, Hate Me, Boys Will Be Boys, The Rocket That Fell to Earth, Sweetness, Showtime, and Gunslinger, The Remarkable, Improbable, Iconic Life of Brett Favre. And he's got another book. It's out right now. Football for a Buck, The Crazy Rise and Crazier Demise of the USFL. It is out right now. Jeff Perlman is in studio. My man, how you living, Jeff?
I'm grinding.
Yeah, you are.
I'm grinding. It's not like writing a Brett Favre book or promoting a Brett Favre book or a Walter Payton book. It's a totally different monster. But it's good. It's a challenge.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about that. I can't wait to get the answer to that question. But I do want to ask you about this because you tweeted about this yesterday. And I want to ask you right off the top. You have covered sports for the better part of two decades. Have you ever seen anybody retire at halftime the way Vontae Davis did? And what do you make of the reaction from his teammate, Lorenzo Alexander?
I kind of thought good for him for staying. It was refreshing. It wasn't political. It was refreshing. I think it's crazy. I've never seen that. To just walk off and just like, I'm done.
Sure.
Like, pretend you're hurt and stay on the sideline. Do something. You know, like something. I thought, cross the line.
Hey, look, I said the same thing. Pretend you're hurt, stay on the sideline, think it over. Hey, look, and I want to be very clear about this. I'm sitting in an air-conditioned studio in Southern California, having never worn a helmet before, so I'm not going to be the guy to say, you're a quitter, you didn't retire. Right. But I had his teammates to say that for me. I didn't have to.
Right. I agree with you. I mean, it kind of reminded me of Mike Tyson sort of quitting in the ring, you know, Evander Holyfield when he basically quit that fight. I think there comes a point with some athletes where they're just like, I'm not feeling this. But it's weird. It's not a natural thing to have in a...
Well, I'm sure they feel that way, but they wait at least until after the game.
Right.
All right, now, when you
It'd be great if I walked off your set right now. I'm like, I'm just done with this.
But if you want to sell a book or two, I'd stick it out and fight, Jeff. All right, so in terms of the book, you said this is not like doing a Brett Favre book. This is a different animal altogether. How so?
I mean, a lot of people don't remember the USFL. A lot of people don't know its impact. A lot of people don't know the names. When you tell people Steve Young played in the USFL, a lot of people say, what the hell is a USFL? You know, so it was a labor of love. I fought for about 9 years to even get a book deal for this. I mean, I kept getting rejected and rejected and rejected. I took less money to do this by far. I attached it to the Favre book I did last time. I actually took less money to do Favre, so they would let me do this. It was just intense. It was really intense.
So why, Jeff? And since I've known you, you've talked about this book. Yeah. And you finally wrote this book. And you're like you said, there was a lot of rejection. Listen, you're a guy who's principled and about integrity. And it's a labor of love. You still got to feed that family. You've got to put food on the table. You moved out to California. This is not a cheap place to live. Why was this book and this topic so important to you?
I just thought the USFL was the greatest story nobody knew. I really did. I thought it was just this insane bolt of lightning that came along and lasted 3 years, and the players were like the names were huge, the impact was huge. The stories are into. I've never written a book I've never in a book with stories this insane before. Never, not even close. It just was this great package. I knew it was a good book. So
Jeff Perlman joins me in studio. He's got a brand new book out. You know, I want to get into some of these stories. But for those who don't remember, and you made this point, how did the USFL first come about? What is the origin story here?
Well, there was a guy, David Dixon, who was a New Orleans art dealer and wealthy. And back in the 60s, he was really pushing for the city of New Orleans to get an NFL team. And the NFL team, the NFL was just denying. And finally, he actually visited with Paul Brown. And he said, the former Browns coach and founder, and said, I have this idea for spring football. And Paul Brown's like, that's a great idea. You should do that. But then the Saints came. And he kind of put it off and put it off. He still had it in his head, though, when he met with George Allen, the Redskins, sure, former Redskins coach, and he said, I still have this idea. And George Allen's like, he was a very excitable man. You need to do this. Do this now. That is the best idea. Don't even wait a minute. And that was sort of the idea behind it, in the basis. We're just going to spring football. The idea was spring football. We're not really going head-to-head with the NFL. It's just another league. You can pay two big-time players, and then we're going to keep it sort of low-key. Two-point conversion, you know, coaches challenge. We're going to draft regionally. So, like, the Philadelphia Stars will be drafting players out of Penn State, out of Pitt primarily. Tampa was drafting Florida State. It was, I honestly believe, a great, really great basic idea.
Well, it was. It was a great idea with some star value and some amazing stories to go along with it. The book is called Football for a Buck. Jeff Perlman is the author. He's in studio. The book is out right now. Now, we're talking about amazing stories, amazing characters. I mean, I'm tempted to go rapid fire and ask you about some of these guys. We're talking Reggie White, Steve Young, Jim Kelly, and someone like Stanley Floyd, who never played a down of college football, but he did race a horse on That's Incredible. Or you and I could start with Greg Fields. Who was Greg Fields?
It's the best. So Greg Fields, you never heard of him, right?
Oh, I know him, yeah.
Oh, you do?
Sure.
Greg Fields played at Grambling, and he was with the Colts as a rookie in 79.
I know of him because of you in the book.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Right. No, I meant before this.
Yeah, yeah.
79, he's with the Colts. 80s, in camp with the Falcons, they cut him. He refuses to leave. So they actually bring an armed security guard in to get him out. He leaves. He's signed by the LA Express. 1984, John Hadle is a coach of the Express. John Hadle tells the assistants, we're going to cut Greg. They're like, you just want to be careful when you do this. I'll be fine, you know. Calls him in. Greg, you've done a good job here, but... And as soon as he says that, Fields reaches back, punches him in the face. Guys come rushing in. I'm going to have to kill you. I'm going to kill you. They hire this guy, Nelson Mercado, who I interviewed. He was Liberace's bodyguard at the time. And they hired him away from Liberace in Las Vegas. I swear to God. And he comes, and now he's the new protector of Greg Fields. And Greg Fields is calling in death threats. He's literally, he has a gun in his
trunk.
Where's
Hard Knocks when we need it?
It would be so good.
He punched John Hadle in the face and threatened to kill him.
Yes, threatened to kill him. And he also threatened to kill the defensive coordinator. And he's...
But at that time, how much money are we talking about? What was the salary for a guy like Greg Fields at that time?
Greg Fields was probably making about 60.
Okay.
And not great. I mean, it was okay.
So that's a reason to go. A reason to threaten to kill somebody.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, he starts calling in death threats. The team, they hire Liberace's security guard. He's showing up at practices just staring. He's calling in. He's showing up at games. They put a tracker on his car. And this is the beauty of it all. Everyone knows about this in the U.S. about it. Big news. But the San Antonio Gunslingers need defensive line help. So they sign Greg Fields. Okay? He shows up and they greet him in helmets and pads as a joke. Like, don't hit us. Okay. The owner of the Gunslingers.
Did he think that was funny?
Yeah, he did, actually.
Okay.
The owner of the Gunslingers is a guy named Clint Mangus. He stopped paying his players. And the Gunslingers were famous because they had a coach with seven fingers who coached from the stands. He'd sit in the stands next to his wife and coach the team. I kid you not.
Best league ever.
It's the best league ever. So they signed Greg Fields. He stops getting paid. 1985. He follows the owner of the team home. He has a baseball bat in his trunk. He pulls up to the guy's side. The owner gets out of the car. He sees Greg Fields. Owner's a little guy. Greg Fields is huge. Greg Fields has a baseball bat. He goes, I see where you live. I know you got money. You better pay me. And he's holding the bat. And the owner goes, wait here. And he goes in his house and he comes back out. I've actually had the number mistaken. I've said 10,000. So he had $17,000 in a paper bag.
In cash.
Gives it to Greg Fields. He's like, are we good? Fields is like, we're good. Now I just want to say, my son Emmett, who actually came to your set once, he and I did a road trip to find Greg Fields because all I had were two addresses.
What the hell's the matter with you?
I'm a horrible parent.
I know you're a journal and all, but are you kidding me?
I know. My son was 9 at the time. I'm like, road trip. He's like, great.
And okay, I was going to crack this joke about, hey, Jeff, what happens when Greg Fields says to you, you pay me, I've got a bat, but now I don't want to make the joke because I don't want him come to find me.
I know.
I'm terrified of this guy.
He's awesome. He's the best.
You found him.
So I had two addresses. We walked throughout San Francisco, knocked on one, lockbox. Second house was in the projects of San Francisco. His sister answered the door. I held up a copy of my book, another book. I was like, this is me, blah, blah, blah. She's like, I can get you. I can give him your phone number. That's all I got. I'm driving home 20 minutes later. Hey, this is Greg. Who's this? I'm like, this is Jeff Perlman. No one's ever been more excited to talk to you. The next day, me, 9-year-old Emmett Perlman, Greg Fields, food court,
you
Sacramento, California.
Emmett to see Greg Fields.
I did. And Greg Fields, we met at a Cold Stone Creamery at a food court in Sacramento at a mall. And he was fantastic. And it was one of the great finds of my life.
And so, I mean, amazing. And I've seen you, you've gone after a lot of people in terms of trying to find them, and then you do or you don't. Yeah. And you found this guy and lived up to all the hype. How was he? Was he pretty pleasant?
He was forthright, pleasant, a little bit punch drunk from probably a lot of football, you know, but great. Confirmed the stories, told a lot of stories. It was good.
His book, Scott's an amazing story. Football for a Buck. It's about the USFL. Jeff Perlman's the author. The book is out right now. You should get it. He's in studio. Let's talk LA Express for a minute. Tom Ramsey, the quarterback, was at a party in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
Everybody was there, including Hank Aaron. Ramsey walks up to Aaron. He introduces himself. What happened next and what advice did Aaron give to Ramsey?
It was one of the great. So Tom Ramsey's favorite athlete is still Hank Aaron. And Hank Aaron, he's shocked that Hank Aaron knows who he is. And Aaron says, you got the money, man. You got the effing money. That's what it's all about.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's so good.
Like, how would he even know Tom Ramsey?
I don't even know. Well, he was a quarterback at UCLA. Then later, the LA Express stopped paying players, and they had Steve Young, and they were taking a bus to get the final game in LA Express. You would know the final game in the history of the LA Express at home was at Pierce College because they couldn't
fill. 818 for life, baby.
Have you been to Pierce College?
Let me tell you about Pierce College. So I went to Calabasas High School, and the joke was, I'll put aside all the jokes about being in 13th grade. You were a degenerate if you went to Pierce. No offense, Pierce College. As JUCOs go, it's really well-respected. It's a really good JUCO school. But yes, they practiced there, didn't they?
No.
They played.
They had their final game ever because they were playing at the LA Coliseum, which was a 90,000-seat stadium, and they're drawing about 3,000 by the end. They had a Steve Young poster giveaway day. First 10,000 fans.
That's
first 10,000 fans get Steve Young posters. 7,000 showed up.
Incredible.
So final game is at Pierce College because they can't fill the Coliseum.
Woodland Hills.
Woodland Hills. The bus is driving the team. The bus driver stops and says, unless I get my $500, I ain't moving. They pass around a hat. This is crazy. The two quarterbacks that day, Doug Williams, Arizona Outlaws.
Wow.
Steve Young, LA Express. They meet at the end of the game. Doug Williams comes, shakes his hand, says, what the hell are we doing here? And that was the last home game in LA Express history.
Jeff Perlman joining us in studio. It's incredible. Now, there might not have been enough money to go around and guys weren't getting paid, but there was more than enough alcohol and drug usage to go around. What was the alcohol consumption and drug use like in the USFL?
Oh, enormous. Enormous. There was a guy in the Birmingham Stallions named Chuck Clanton. He was a safety, came out of Auburn. He told me they played a game in San Antonio. They were a much better team. And he said the night before, like 80% of the team was snorting coke on the plane. And they showed up and they got killed. Then my favorite guy is Richard Johnson, who later played with the Detroit Lions. He was a receiver for the Houston Gamblers. He used to smoke a joint before every game. Like, literally, that was part of his
like
preparation.
Like, on the way to the game, right?
Yeah, he would be smoking a joint. And that was his thing. And he was a great – he had 110 catches first year. He was great. Well, he had a teammate named Vince Corville, who wasn't as good a receiver. Nice guy. And he sees Richard Johnson smoking joints, and he's like, I don't know, works for him. He's never smoked pot before. He starts smoking a joint before the game. He gets on the field. He's just overcome by paranoia. He doesn't know what's going on.
No way, right? See, I mean, if smoking, and I'm not a guy that bakes, I'm not here to judge, I just don't do it, but I know that paranoia is something that comes along with it. Dude, how could you be playing football, even at that level, if you're paranoid and guys are looking to knock you the hell out?
Well,
how do you do that and what the coaches think?
The coaches would, there was one coach who would check on him every game and be like, you medicated today? Okay, we're good. They would smell, another teammate said he would smell it coming out of his hotel room and be like, all right, Richard's going to be good today. The other thing they did, they had a offensive line coach named Bob Young, who played for a long time with the Cardinals. And Bob Young didn't just want his guys to use steroids. He insisted, if you do not use steroids,
you're not
playing on this offensive line.
Wow.
And he would force the guys to use roids.
Jeff Perlman's my guest. The book is called Football for a Buck. It is out right now. All right, Jeff, so we literally just blew right through that entire segment. We were out of time. We didn't even talk about Donald Trump. Is there any way that you want to stay over? Now, you know we don't do this in the jungle.
Come on.
Do you want to stay over and do one more segment?
I love this show.
Let's do it. All right, Jeff Perlman's in studio. I could not get to all of it. I tried to go rapid fire, but that's how much good content there is in this book, and that's how awesome that league was, the USFL. The book is called Football for a Buck. Jeff Perlman wrote it. He took less money to write this book. It's been a labor of love. He wanted to get it done. He's been talking about it for years and years and years. It's now out, and he's in studio. Let me do this. I can't promise you that I'll take a telephone call, but I'll open it up, and we'll see. 1-800-636-8686. Donald Trump played a role with the USFL and had a role in the demise of the USFL. I want to get into that and more. And also, if you buy this book, you may get something in return other than great reading. All of that coming up. One bonus segment.